for him and his captive right now? Oryx began to ask once more about the phone calls. Court stood in front of him and pulled two new zip ties out of his backpack to restrain the man's hands in front of his body. Before he had done so, Court shrugged. Whatever. I've been ordered to kill you.
By the American actors.
The big black man made it as a statement, but it was clear he was asking. He pulled his hands back and away.
Negative. The CIA wants you dead, too. It's pretty much a unanimous consensus at this point. Give me your hands.
Oryx's face contorted in shock, like he'd been doused with cold water from an ice bucket.
No! We had an agreement! They need me alive! The European...
Shut up! We need to get out of here so I can think without worrying about them.
I can help them with their...
Calm down. Give me your hands.
They cannot just change the arrangement like...
Court pulled his Glock. The drug slowed him, and his stiff gun arm wavered. He pressed it against Abood's throat.
I said, calm the fuck down!
Oryx's hands went up in surrender, and then they went for the pistol. Chapter 45. President Abood was a big man, taller and broader and thicker than Gentry by a wide margin, but he was 66 years old and did not possess even a modicum of the training in the brain and muscles and soul of the American warrior. It should have been no match. But for the morphine. Abood knocked the Glock pistol away with his first strike, wrapped a meaty hand around each of the Americans' wrists, and pulled their bodies together. Six moved slowly and sluggishly, did not even realize he was being attacked for the first few seconds of the action. He thought Oryx was just freaking out about the possibility of having the CIA's backing pulled out from under him and was just slapping at Court like a frustrated child. But when Gentry hit the ground, slamming into his wounded back under the weight of the huge Sudanese president, the danger of the situation became apparent to him through the dulled reality of his doped-up senses. The drugs were not enough to block the flash fire of excruciating agony as it registered in his shoulder and then transferred to his brain. He screamed out, and a series of punches rained down on him from above. Court covered his face, focused on the pain in his back to wake his adrenaline, to jumpstart his muscle memory, and to get this big bastard off of him. From the tiny light of the fire, Court's narrow eyes located the next punch, a right hook already on its way from on high. Gentry short-circuited the attack with an attack of his own. He hit Abood hard in the nose. The president's hook landed a quarter second later, but it was weak and poorly targeted. The fist turned quickly into a hand that reached up to his face as he fell on his back, holding his broken nose and wiping free-flowing blood from the swollen nostrils. Gentry kicked Oryx off of him the rest of the way, rolled over, and began crawling around looking for the pistol. He found it against the wall, retrieved it as he stood, then retrieved Oryx by his shirt collar and pulled him into a standing position. Within seconds, he had the moaning man's hands zip-tied behind his back, and a minute later, the Škoda tore through the high grasses on its way back to the main road. Gentry thought over his options, and this did not take long, as there were so few.
He had no idea where he was going, other than to just find some new hide so he could work out a plan.
Oryx rubbed his face against the upholstery in the back seat of the car because he could not use his hands to wipe the blood away, and he moaned and cussed softly in Sudanese Arabic. The phone rang. Gentry had no interest in listening to one more petition from Zack to do what he was told, but he answered the phone anyway. The rage and adrenaline from the fight in the shack still had his emotions in high gear. Court said,
"The time for talking is over, asshole. If you're going to come after me, come on, because the quicker I kill you once and for all, the quicker I can break cover and get my job done."
But it was not Zack on the other end of the line. It was Denny Carmichael. He said,
"Young man, Sierra One explained the problem at hand. I am calling to see what I can do to rectify it."
Carmichael was scared, nervous about having one of his men on a rogue mission. Court could hear it in his voice.
"I'm sorry, sir. Killing Oryx at this point will create a disaster I am not prepared to be a part of."
"I understand how you feel. I was one of the architects of Nocturne Sapphire. All along, we knew that if we could take him alive, he could be very useful to us and to his country. But unfortunately, we cannot leave any trace that the CIA or any U.S. operator was in Swakin yesterday. If evidence comes out, then we will have a massive international superpower crisis, which is, frankly, a hell of a lot more important than civil war in a third world nation.
So you agree there will be a war? A civil war with the backing of the Chinese and Russians?
Civil war, yes, in the short term, it is likely. But we do not see the superpowers playing an active role.
Maybe you don't have the assets in place to see it happening.
I can assure you, we have close contact with officials very high in the Sudanese government.
How close is your contact?
Extremely close.
How high are the officials?
Extremely high.
Well, I have the fucking president sitting in the back seat of my car, so when you can get a source higher and closer than that, maybe you'll impress me.
There was a long pause.
There is an important trade deal in the works.
Gentry couldn't care less.
Yeah, so maybe we take it on the chin from the Chinese.
That sucks, but we'll get over it.
That's not for you to decide.
Actually, it is. I've got the president. I intend to get him to the ICC alive. I am going to do the right thing here. There are a lot of people in this country who are depending on it. You guys had the right idea. Nocturne Sapphire was the right op. Yeah, it was hopelessly fucked up because Sudan Station doesn't know its ass from a hole in the ground. But we were damn close to pulling it off. I'm going to finish this. You guys at Langley need to realize that what I'm doing here is the right thing, and you need to rethink your...
Denny's calm but annoyed countenance of all their earlier conversations morphed in an instant to screaming, shouting vitriol.
I don't have time to listen to a sermon from a pissant like you. Let me explain something. The past 4 years have been a cakewalk for you. There are people up here who have a soft spot for Court Gentry. You did good work for a long time for precious little thanks, and that earned you a great deal of respect in the SAD. When the shoot on sight went out on you, there were some in the bureaucracy here who were borderline insubordinate in their conviction to the cause, and the operation to eliminate you suffered for it. But now, Mr. Gentry, now there is not a man left in the agency who's on your side. Not only will I reinstate the SOS, but I will bump it up to the top of the priority list. It won't be some half-assed echelon tracking, interdepartmental memoranda, and Interpol watch request. It will be coordinated teams of Tier 1 hunter-killers, SAD, SOG, paramilitary operations officers, combat applications group, proxy teams of bounty hunters. I will personally arrange that every available SAD asset will be brought to bear against you. There won't be a rock big enough for you to crawl under, a handler foolish enough to sponsor you, a country brazen enough to allow you inside its borders. Zack is going to hunt you down. He will stop you, and he will kill you. You may still have a pulse for a bit, Mr. Gentry, but as of this very moment, your life is ended.
Carmichael did not say anything else. Neither did Court. He liked getting the last word, but at this moment it seemed as if the last words on the subject had been spoken. No clever quip could blunt the impact of Carmichael's rant. This man was not threatening anything that he did not have the power to put into motion. After an extremely long pause, the man from Langley spoke quietly. It sounded to Court as if he were hanging up the phone as he did so.
That is all.
Chapter 46. Tuesday was Ellen Walsh's first day back in her tiny office in The Hague since leaving for the Sudan 5 weeks earlier. Her supervisors in the office of the prosecutor for the International Criminal Court had offered a week for her to tend to herself upon her return from Africa, but the 35-year-old Canadian had only taken a day to go to a local dermatologist to look at her sunburned face, and a GP to give her a prescription for migraines she'd been having since the truck explosion on the road to Dira. When she appeared through the elevator doors to her office, her co-workers were shocked to see her. Snippets of her adventure had made it out. The international media had covered the attack of the Speranza Internazionale convoy and the murder by the Janjaweed militia of world-famous Mario Bianchi and two of his local staff. There was no mention in the reports that other Westerners had been in the convoy, but Ellen herself had spoken to the administrative heads in the office of the prosecutor, and the story had filtered its way downstairs like water poured through cracks in the flooring. From there, administrative assistants of the top brass told friends and friends of friends who worked throughout the building. Her brutal sunburn and a sad and distant look in her eyes lent credence to the rumors, and Ellen knew it would not be long before she would be forced to send out an email thanking everyone for their concern and, simultaneously, asking everyone to please respect her privacy and understand that she just wasn't quite yet up to talking about what she had witnessed in Darfur. On her computer in front of her were two reports, neither finished. One was an incident report upon which she was to put in writing as much as she could remember about her discovery of the Russian Rosabaron export aircraft in Darfur and the men on board, along with any names, corroborating witnesses, etc., etc. She had only opened the template and put in information regarding her initial plan to enter Darfur with false credentials. Even this part of the document was difficult for her to write. So much had happened since her time in Khartoum, skulking around other NGO offices looking for her way into Darfur, that it seemed to be relegated to the portion of her brain reserved for distant memory. The other was her report about the murder of two wounded and defenseless gunmen by an American, John Doe, who had flown into Al-Fasher with the Russian aircraft. She'd all but finished this report. She could not get it out of her mind, but she was not sure if she was writing it in an attempt to purge her thoughts of the atrocity, or if she would, indeed, file the report and open an investigation into this man. She was torn by her official obligation and her feelings towards this stranger. He had helped her and convinced her he was not evil, but she was concerned that he was an individual teetering on the edge, a man who needed to be stopped before more atrocities were committed. And what to make of the news that the president of the Sudan had been kidnapped during a massive battle with rebels on the east coast of the country? Could Six have had some involvement with that? The timing was right, but Six did not seem like a man who could control a force of Sudanese rebels. He could barely control himself. Her desk phone rang.
Ellen, there is someone calling himself Six on the phone for you. I'll take it.
And then,
hello?
3 days are up. I thought you would have caught me by now.
Where are you?
Instead of an answer to her question, he said,
we need to talk.
This situation going on in Sudan right now, there is not much information. I know there has been a battle. The president is missing. It happened right when you said something would happen. So, at first, I assumed that you somehow had something to do.
I have Abood. I have him right here with me.
Her voice was soft but intense.
Oh my God.
Crazy, huh?
Ellen breathed nervously into the phone.
She looked out her office door, then stood up quickly and shut it, nearly pulling the phone off her desk while doing so.
What? Who are you? What are you going? Why are you calling me?
There was no response at first. She could hear the pounding of her own heart.
Do you want him?
What?
Abood. He's yours if you want him.
Me?
Yes. And just so you know, I didn't kill any Chinese. That's on the news these days, I hear.
Yes, it is.
That wasn't me. I kidnapped Abood, but now I don't really know what to do with him.
Ellen's voice was still barely a whisper.
Didn't you think about that beforehand?
Yeah. Plans change. Deals fall through. You know how it is.
Right.
She had no idea what he was talking about.
Look, he has information about Russia and China. He says the two are going to start a proxy war over Sudan unless he does something to stop it.
Yes, there have been rumors.
What do you think?
Well, I'm not an expert in that. I am more involved in the armaments.
I'm pretty sure you are the most expert person I can get on the phone for a chat at the moment. I'm asking you what you think.
I think President Abood is absolutely correct.
Court filled her in on what he'd learned. She admitted to knowing part of the story, but she was fascinated that Six's information came directly from the president of the Sudan himself.
He says a deal was in the works for him to turn himself into the ICC.
She cleared her throat and spoke in a normal register.
Above my pay grade, Six.
Well, how about this? How about you tell the big shots at your organization that if they can find a way to pick me and Abood up from the Red Sea coast, then they can have him, That ought to bump up your pay grade a bit. Ellen bristled.
I'm not here for the money.
Okay, donate it to charity. I don't give a shit. I just want to stop the situation here from getting any worse.
That's your only motivation?
Yes.
How can I believe that?
I've been ordered to kill the fucker. I would love to kill the fucker. I think you of all people can believe that. But I'm not going to, because I think he can actually save lives.
Gentry imagined Ellen still more or less in shock over what happened in Darfur. He knew she probably didn't trust him, and this phone conversation was surely another surreal event that her brain was having trouble processing, so he was not surprised that she hesitated for a long time. Finally, she cleared her throat.
I'll go upstairs right now, talk to the prosecutor himself. We'll find a way to come and get Abood.
Excellent.
Will you be coming to The Hague with him?
Court sniffed. And deprive the International Criminal Court of another fruitless manhunt? She chuckled. She had a nice laugh, throaty and unguarded. Court was pretty sure he'd never heard it before. She answered finally,
I have not begun the process of preparing an indictment against you.
Yet, you mean?
Another pause. Gentry could tell by the breaks between her words that she had been wrestling with this very issue.
There's a good man in you, Six. I can see him through the cracks in your hard shell.
You're a shrink now?
Bad news. It doesn't take a shrink to see the cracks in you.
You don't know me.
She changed gears.
I know you are not CIA. I made some calls. My sources say they don't have anyone in Darfur.
Like I told you.
But if you are not CIA, then who are you?
It doesn't matter.
It absolutely does, Six. The ICC will not help you if they don't know who they are dealing with.
I am privately contracted.
A private party has hired you to kidnap the president and hand him over to the ICC?
Yeah.
Then they told you to kill him.
Right again.
She paused a long time, disbelieving, perhaps. Finally.
Who is this private party?
Can't tell you.
You have to.
Court knew it would come to this. He tried to sell it with a straight face, though he was speaking on his satellite phone.
Okay. I've been contracted by private U.S. citizens, people in the arts and entertainment industry mainly.
Oryx himself had given him this idea.
In the arts and... So, are you saying movie stars are paying you to do this?
Well, yeah. I guess I am.
That is your story?
He smiled. She was a smart woman, too smart to believe him, but also too smart to not turn away the president handed over to her organization on a silver platter. She'd play along.
And I'm sticking to it, he replied.
Okay.
It was said with a worried tone, like she wasn't sure she'd be able to sell this fantasy to her superiors any better than Six had to her.
I'll call you back. Are you safe for now?
Court exhaled.
Oh, yeah. Snug as a bug, Ellen.
I'll hurry.
Chapter 47. Dawn rose over the still waters of the Red Sea as Court drove the Škoda north on the coastal highway that led from Port Sudan to the Egyptian border. Outside the driver's side window, he could just see the Red Sea hills, and out the passenger side, past Oryx's bruised and impassive face, he looked out over the water as the blackness of the dark warmed into the softness of the pre-dawn. An hour earlier, he'd skirted to the west of Port Sudan under cover of darkness, and now the Škoda had the flat road to itself. Court had worried about military checkpoints, but there were none. He'd seen several police cars hours earlier, but in his dark car he never once felt exposed. The coastal road turned inland for a few miles, towards the hills, but not that far to the east, and then it cranked back to the north. At 7 a.m., he turned off the highway and followed a sand and dirt and coral path that headed back towards the water. He passed small towns on both sides of the road. They were higher than the road on rocky plateaus that continued on to the sea. It had taken a full day for the ICC to put a plan together to take possession of Oryx, and Court was not privy to many of the details. All he knew was that he was to drive himself and his captive to a Dutch-run seaside scuba diving resort, just 20 miles from the Egyptian border, and wait for a pickup by a team of ICC investigators who were on their way from Greece. Ellen Walsh would not be with them, and Court found this unfortunate, though he did not want her exposed to danger. Gentry himself had no intention of leaving with the ICC team. No, he would put Oryx in the speedboat or the helicopter or the SUV or however the president was to be extracted, and then Court would go in the other direction. He figured he could get a small dive boat from the resort and head north towards Egypt. He'd run out of gas before the border, but then maybe he could land and hitchhike farther north, make the border crossing in the desert in the night with some friendly Bedouins. He'd have to do all this with a raging infection in his back and no antibiotics or pain meds. He'd poured the last of his antiseptic on his wound before he and Oryx set out from their second hide the evening before, and he'd dumped the narcotics in a ditch 15 minutes later. So great was his desire to consume them. He'd have to do without a rest.